We'll never build the same bike twice, but we might build a similar bike, use similar components. It is special. You know, you feel like you're part of a special breed of people. You know, and it is a, you know, it's a family, isn't it? You know, motorcycling is a family thing. You know, we're all one part of one big family, you know, brought together by one common interest. I've got the diary. When can I book you in?
Yeah, you've got the diary. I don't know if my wallet's big enough, but yeah.
Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikesure will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Right, this is going to be a great episode today, Prats, I'm telling you, because today's guest is a gent who, well, he is massively respected in the customization of not just bikes, but cars, trucks, you name it. He turns his hand to anything. His company, the brand, A Crazy Horse, I'm a huge fan because I have a customized bike and a truck. I've no doubt we'll talk about that very shortly, but it is the one and only Mr. Paul Beamish. Morning, Paul.
Morning, how are we doing, guys?
We're good, Paul. All good. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. I can tell when Ewan's get really excited for one of these, Paul, and it's definitely one of those today because of his customization. I was going to say fetish, but that makes it sound terrible, but his love and his passion for all things like that. It was 30-odd years now in the biz? And given what you've done, given your approach, given your obvious love of the source material, how did it first come about and where does the brand come from?
It first came about 31 years ago, and it came out of myself and some friends riding Harleys, customising Harleys, and back then there were very few Harley dealers. There were very few aftermarket places. You couldn't get parts easily. Mm-hmm. So a few of us were actually riding to Holland for the Harley Super Rally, and a stupid thing like a clutch cable went, and we couldn't get a clutch cable. So I had some friends who were involved in Zodiac in Holland, which is a big aftermarket company. Mm-hmm. I had a word with them. I said, look, we're a couple of oiks from Suffolk. We've got a little shed, a little wooden shed. Can we run a little shop at the weekend out of a little wooden shed? And being Dutch, they said, yeah, you can do that. And that's how it started.
Wow. And I'm assuming back in the 90s, clearly your kind of work, there was a need for it, but there wasn't many people doing it. Was it a different face back then of customization in terms of, you know, I would assume, and I mean this with respect, back in the day, people who would customize bikes, big hairy men with beards who've got, you know, oil under their fingertips and they know their way around a bike. Whereas nowadays, and I'm not classifying myself as this, but I think a lot of people who tinker on bits and pieces, they're more like, I don't know. You get some trendy
hipsters.
youngsters, if you want, who want something a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, some things haven't changed. Beards, long hair, in some cases. I think, back then, and you said, you know, where does the name come from? Well, the name actually, you know, the guy that I started the business with, he was even older than I am, and he had built custom bikes back when the custom car and the custom bike world were much closer aligned. And you used to get things like the Doncaster Custom Show, where you would get, you know, these sort of digger motorcycles and stuff like that. And he originally called one of his bikes Crazy Horse back then. And we just carried that name on for the business. But also, you know, I don't think it matters what you look like if you're going to customize something. That is not important at all. You know, the 70s and the 80s, people looked in a certain way. People can look however they want. As long as you've got enthusiasm for what you're doing, it doesn't matter.
And I suppose the general theme there being, Paul, is the passion for what you're doing, as you say, the enthusiasm for it. I mean, you must have seen such a change in the last 30-odd years of, as you say, now with it just, I mean, it's more of a global and a deeper chat about commercialization and what's available from a consumer point of view, but it sounds like you had to go and really dig around, obviously scour what would have been a fledgling internet back then, whereas now, I mean, you could order something for a bike and it could be here by either the end of the day or by tomorrow morning, couldn't it? So from that point of view, does that make it easier? Does that make it more straightforward? Does that dilute the authenticity of it? Or am I overthinking that?
I mean, I think the thing is that, you know, the custom world, there's massive variations within the custom world. You know, even if you're just going to say within the Harley custom world, there's still a massive variation, you know, from people that want to make all their own parts, from people that want to bolt on stuff, from people that will take, you know, and a lot of it driven when we started was people didn't have as much money to spend then on their passions. Mm. You know, there wasn't as much money around 30 years ago to do this sort of stuff. So people would make stuff, try and find old stuff, put stuff together, you know, and that, you know, that's a certain area of the business is still very much that, you know, and people will fall over cooing about some part they found from 1968 that was only available on this one Harley for 1 year sort of thing. Mm. But, you know, I think that, you know, when we started, we were sort of pretty poor. We didn't have a lot of money. So we made a lot of our own bits. We used a lot of old bits and we refurbished a lot of old bits. At the same time, the custom world was expanding within the Harley world, you know, because, and really it came about because old Harleys were, you know, the brakes were terrible. Lots of bits of them weren't very good.
What do you mean old Harleys? just
going off what you're saying there. And again, as we said, we've had so many guests on here that are either, I mean, from the broad spectrum of the biking world, and some of them are kind of bike reviewers and influencers that are on YouTube talking about the newest box fresh machines that you're knocking on 20, 25, 30 grand's worth of equipment there. You go back to what Harleys are, and this is maybe a bit of a sidebar about what Harley Davidson is. It's always been an iconic motorbike. To a kid growing up in Yorkshire that was nowhere near Route 66, it was always an iconic motorbike. Yeah, and I was on the way down to work on Friday, just gone down the A1, chucking it down. This fella comes down on this beautiful, it was a brand new, huge fairing, kind of electric glide type thing, gorgeous looking bit of kit. I presume they are more reliable now, but how does a brand that everyone says, well, they weren't very reliable, they weren't very comfortable, they took a lot of work and a lot of maintenance, how does a brand that's got that reputation become that big and that revered? Because it's bitten you, obviously.
I think, you know, obviously, you know, you've got to look at American culture and, you know, an American culture, you know, is rock and roll. It's customizing, but customizing really came, yeah, you know, if you look at customizing, where did it come from? You know, no different from this country. Really, it came from trying to make things lighter, faster, different, you know. So you can go way back in the car world to the moonshiners and Mr. Ford introducing the first volume V8, which was faster than any other car on the road, you know, hence why they bought lots of Indians and Harleys to chase after them. You know, they were the only things that could catch them, you know, and, yeah, you know, an Indian 4 in the 1930s, you know, with a left-hand throttle so you could shoot with your right hand as you were chasing the moonshiners, you know, and those cars led to the hot rods and to Bonneville and going faster and street racing. Because we all think America is just slouchy, soft, fat things that you ride around in. But the reality is that whole custom world, really, just like in this country, probably after the Second World War and people are going to airfields and building, you know, sort of Lotus 6s and 7s and stuff like that. It all comes back to that same thing, but then it just mushrooms out into a whole world of different stuff.
Yeah, it's a special world, isn't it? Because I go to a lot of car shows, bike shows, and, you know, I spent the whole weekend tinkering on my truck and my bike, and it gave me immense satisfaction. Listen, I'm no good with spanners, but I can manage now, and I'm learning all the time. But people are always there to help you. And, you know, if you had a brand new supercar or a modern sports bike, I wouldn't know the first thing how to, like, change anything on that. But with my bike, I can go out there and I can tinker and I can make a few mistakes. I get YouTube up and I can fix it. But what I'd like to know is with your customer base, I mean, you've got such respect within the industry. People love your work. I've seen your work. It's great. Is there a big difference between a customer that comes to you and says, listen, I want you to build me a one-off brilliant customized bike versus you know, a hot rod or a truck, you know, are they coming from the same mindset? Are they, because I think these people are brilliant. They're individual. They're not sheeps. You know, they don't want to just get another, you know, there's 30 Ducatis at a bike show or McLaren cars. These things are built, not brought. And that's what makes it unique.
Yeah. And I think that, yeah, that's exactly right. You know, supercars are fantastic. Hyperbikes are fantastic. But if you want something different, I think, you know, and being bikers, motorcyclists, whatever, on the whole, you know, it's a passion. You know, no one really rides in this country. That'll probably cause a few issues, but not many people ride in this country because they have to ride a motorbike like they used to. It's because they want to ride a motorbike. Yeah. And you're a bit more individual. You know, it's quite interesting. I was having a chat with, you know, someone about how motorcycle shops should look. You know, and our motorcycle, yeah, we try and do our shops. They're all a little bit different. They're how a motorcycle shop would want to be if I was to walk in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not like an Audi dealership. And I was having a chat with a manufacturer about this who was talking about, you know, wanting very nice, very clean looking showrooms. And I sort of said, yeah, but like an Audi showroom. I said, yeah, but, you know, you and your Audi mates don't go meet for a coffee at the Audi showroom on a Saturday morning. It's a totally different world.
The things that just instantly sprung to mind about that is looking out the window as it's absolutely chucking it down is about being comfortable in these shops as well, Paul, because you come in, you get caught in a storm, you piss wet through, for want of a better expression. You feel a bit like, I don't want to go in this really pristine white showroom that's got £30,000 bikes. It, like, you know what I mean? You would feel a bit of an outsider. It's such a, because I suppose it's that precision engineering that they're looking at, aren't they, where they're going, well, these are now works of, not necessarily works of art, the works of science. Whereas if you look at what yours are, they are beautiful, bespoke motorcycles that have a story, have a heritage, have a history, have a real personality to them. So where does that come from then? Do people come to you and say, look, I've got this and I want it to look like this, or I've got no idea, could you build me something that you think I might like? How does it work?
I mean, from my point of view, you know, obviously, you know, and yeah, you, the internet, you know, things have changed massively. When we started, the internet was in its infancy. You know, if you wanted to advertise your business, yeah, your only choice was an advert in Backstreet Heroes and the Yellow Pages. Yeah. You know, it's changed a lot since then. But I think you know, from our point of view, yeah, nowadays people will come with, you know, they'll show us pictures. I've seen this, I've seen that. I want this with that. I want that with that, and all the rest of it. What we tend to want to do is, yeah, of course, we listen to a customer as to what they want. However, we always want to build a bike that's going to be good to ride. That's good, yeah, and sometimes some customers don't really understand the fact if you put this wheel with that wheel and that bit with that bit and let's have some zebra stripes here and whatever, it's not going to end up quite as the bike they want it to be.
I was going to ask, what's your relationship like with manufacturers? You said before we came on air, we were chatting, you've been away with Indian. Do people like Indian and Harley, do these manufacturers look, oh, blimey, here he comes again, he's going to make our bike even cooler? I mean, do they see you as a threat, or are you enhancing what they already produce?
I think it's interesting. You know, the problem with manufacturers don't have the easiest of lives nowadays because they have lots of legislation to deal with. They have, yeah, they are probably, I think they're probably very focused on legislation and what legislation says they can build. Some manufacturers get the fact that if you're going to, you know, if someone can customize them well and safely so that they are a good motorcycle, they want you to do it. And Indian support us massively. That's why we're an Indian dealer, because they encourage us to build custom bikes. You know, they encourage the fact that, you know, as long as we don't fundamentally ruin them, they're happy, and in fact encourage us to. And in fact, the new CEO, who is ex Vance and Hines, wants to push that more. Wants to push that in, because they understand people buy a cruiser bike and want to personalize it.
So somebody like a rock star, let me think, let me just pluck one out of the air. Richard Jones, there you go, the bass player from the Stereophonics, Paul, comes to you and says, I'm into biking, I've got this bike, I'd like you to do something with it. Or was that a case, I mean, I know it's a couple of years ago now, but that sense of, did he know what he wanted, or was he very happy to be led by what is quite clearly an expert?
He knew the style of bike he wanted. Mm. You know, and Rich, you know, his background is very much sports bikes and that sort of stuff. So when we were talking to him about doing an Indian, it needed to have a performance edge to it. So you know, we decided to take certain elements and give it a more sporty look rather than a more traditional custom look. Mm-hmm. So he was quite involved in that. And then we got him involved, which was lovely. We got him involved in the foundry and actually making some custom parts and all the rest of it. And
oh, cool. That
arced back to his first job in a steelworks in South Wales.
Wow.
So he understood all the fact, you know, so he, it was great going back into the foundry, and we made some personalised hand-cast items for him, for the bike. So we always try and include little elements that are personal to the customer.
That's nice. And yeah,
I mean, that just that in itself, you, I mean, we talk about tinkering and bits and bobs that I've put on my bike, which are all very much aftermarket, but via the actual dealership. So it's not, I've not got anything remotely techie in the garage that could do that. But getting Rich involved in that and investing not just time, but a real love into his own bespoke machine, that bonds a rider and a bike even more, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And then, Dave, if all, you know, if the customer just wants to do some mild customization, if the bike looks cool, that's brilliant. You know, that's their look. That's what they want. And that's what we try to do. And as I said, Indian are, you know, very good at it. You know, they let us really do whatever we want, which a lot of manufacturers wouldn't. You know, and another, yeah, obviously the one we did last year that was probably the big bill last year was the Black Sabbath Ozzy Osbourne bike for the last concert.
Yeah, you know, amazing.
And that was, yeah, we were able to put some really nice little touches into that, you know, which they loved, you know, and the customer loved as well.
I don't know what it says about me, the fact that you put these lovely personal touches on it. My bike went off and it came back, it had loads of little bullet shells put on it. So I don't know what that says about me, but have you ever built a bike though? Because obviously every bike's individual, and the Ozzy Osbourne Black Sabbath one's lovely, but have you ever built a bike where, I'm clearly you love your work, but have you ever got to the stage where your customer's coming to pick it up and you've fallen in love with it? Because I can imagine building something, going, no, I don't want him to have it, I want it. Has that ever happened when you've built a bike and by the end of the build you're going, nah, you don't want it, just leave it with me? I mean, you must be proud of what you do.
Yeah, of course that happens. Although, what, you know, we always try to feed that and to stop us from wanting to keep all the bikes that we build. We build quite a lot of bikes for ourselves. And there's two reasons. One is if we build bikes for ourselves, you know, we could do exactly what we want with the bike. Mm-hmm. So we know how it's going to work, how it's going to ride, all the rest of it. And we can also, hopefully, you know, that will encourage people to see something a little bit different. I want something similar. We'll never build the same bike twice, but we might build a similar bike, use similar components, whatever. So it's hard, like you say earlier, it's hard for customers sometimes to know what they want. So if we can guide them by showing them all the sorts of different bikes that we built, you know, and over the years we've built all sorts of different types, and our styles have changed. I think that's one of the things that is a little bit unique about our business. We've never had one style.
Isn't that really nice though, Paul, the fact that people trust you with their hard-earned cash and they sort of go, I don't really know what I want, but I know I want you to build it. So that must be, that's almost, you know, it's like an artist, isn't it? Coming, commissioning a piece of artwork. People trust you. I mean, that must make you and your team pretty proud.
Yeah, I think, you know, the team is, you know, love building bikes. We love building stuff for people. And the best thing is when you see someone riding it and using it.
In the world of customization, Paul, and you talk about how the difference with what the internet is now and social media, and whether obviously that pool is deep and wide and it's full of a lot of things. That sense of originality, akin to somebody writing a song that sounds similar to someone else's song and they say, hang on, I had that idea first. And then you backtrack and trying to work out actually it comes from somewhere so far back that you can't say it's your idea. It's all an interpretation of a theme. Is there anything in that at all from your point of view where you've got to either second guess what you're doing, make sure, double sure it's not seen somewhere you've seen before, or that must be quite tough.
I think, you know, obviously Everything is spun off from other things. I think it's very rare to say anything is totally different, yeah, or totally unique. You know, but I think that, you know, I mean, and if I look back over the years that we've done stuff, you know, a really fertile era was, you know, the sort of the early to mid to late 2000s, when the custom world was going fairly bonkers, you know. Things like Discovery Channel coming out with Biker Build-Off and Jesse James.
Yeah, loved it.
Those choppers. Mm. That whole era prior to the 2008 recession was just, yeah, it was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, and the World Championship shows, the European Championship shows, people like Fred Krueger coming out with stuff, and all these different, you know, names, and people were coming out with some amazing bikes. And I think that drove more ideas, more different things, that's older looks, newer looks, you know, it was a really fertile time for that.
I'm daydreaming of what else I could do to my bike or my truck, or, you know, I think how your brain works.
I've got the diary. When can I book you in?
Yeah, you've got the diary. I don't know if my wallet's big enough, but yeah.
Hey, don't worry, Paul. He's very good at talking people into freebies. Don't listen to him. Let's have a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping, folks. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Before Ewan's next question, Paul, there's a great, his last bit on one of his last posts on Instagram shows about his love of the customization of his bike. And there's a great clip which shows him riding, looking really cool down the road as the peg falls off you.
No, it's the fuel cap flew off. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to blame it on my mechanical error. I didn't screw it on properly, but actually it's a bit wobbly. So what's it? It's a Harley, isn't it? What do you expect? Is it the caption I write? Is it even a Harley if something doesn't fall off it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'd love to ask you, Paul. I mean, this is a tricky one. It's like choosing your favourite child, but, you know, you obviously speak very passionately about some of the builds you've done. Have you got a favourite? Does one spring to mind?
Have I got a favourite? Oh. I think in a way, I suppose if I had to choose a favourite, and I don't have a favourite, but if you were to make me choose one as a build that did a massive amount for Crazy Horse at the time, pushed us into is probably back in 2005-06. I was building just a little old Ironhead Sportster, which I bought off a mate, as a little runaround bike for the shop. So we spent very little money on it, and at the time I was quite influenced by a book that I'd been given, which was the Samurai Chopper book, Zero Engineering book. So we built a little zero engineering style Sprinter forked bike, and we just got components from wherever, and it was, again, it was during this time where people were coming out with all sorts of different stuff, and we all used to build bikes for the European Championships in March that was sponsored by Custom Chrome, and we built this little bike. You know, and there was just things like, you know, you're trying to do different little things. So we're in the local pub, and that got a nice brass top on the beer pump. Mm-hmm. And I said to the landlord, "Can I have that?" And he said, "If you can get it off, you can have it." Took that off. We turned that into the key for the ignition, and all sorts of different stuff. So that little bike, first of all, we took it to Doncaster. When they tried to do a British biker build off, we weren't included in the build off because we weren't from the M62, because it was only people off the M62 that were allowed to enter. We were far too south, far too poor.
We're a funny bunch of people. I can only apologize for that.
But we took this little bike and it won the show to go to the European Championships. We took it to the European Championships, where there were 100 bikes from all the builders in Europe, and it was in the top five there. So then it got taken to Sturgis, to the World Championships, mm-hmm. and that little bike spun off into all sorts of different stuff. We actually built the following year, we built a Model A coupe to match it and stuff, and took that to the first custom show in Budapest, and did all sorts of things. So I suppose that bike is the one that spun us off into all sorts of different areas.
And if that's the bike that created, or was the real kind of birthing point of what Crazy Horse has become, what then starts before that then for you, Paul, from a biking point of view? What got you into motorcycling?
You want me to tell you my first motorcycle?
Go on.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
No.
So, what got me into motorcycling, living in Suffolk, you know, you're 16 years old, you want to go and do stuff and you can't do anything because there's no public transport or whatever. So, and I went to the engineer, I went and did, left school at 16 and went to the tech college to do engineering, and everyone there had mopeds. Mm. So I had a bright green Honda CB50J.
Nice. It's got to start somewhere.
Yeah, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at. Look what that little love affair has brought you. I mean, it's changed your life, and I'm sure your family's lives. What was it like then when you heard those beautiful words, when you took your test and they said, congratulations, you've passed? Because it just all of a sudden, you know, as a young lad, it gives you freedom, doesn't it?
Totally.
In Suffolk, there's no public transport. You pass your bike test and you're like, right, the world is my oyster.
Oh yeah, definitely. That you know, and I think that's definitely what motorcycling was out. That freedom that you know, I can go anywhere now. I can do anything sort of thing. You know, and I'm lucky. You know, I took my test when you just had to go three times round the block, and some bloke jumped out with a clipboard, and you were away, sort of thing. So, I think the Harley thing, you know, that had always been sitting there, because growing up in this region, you know. We've still got the two biggest American air bases in the UK, 15 miles away. I grew up to the sounds of Harley Davidsons and American V8s.
Yeah.
That was, you know, I remember, you know, when you're lying in bed, you know, 12, 13 years old, with the windows open in the summer, you could hear V8s and Harley Davidsons, because we had 9,000 Americans living in the town.
And were they, again, just motoring about doing their thing? I mean, that's a really kind of pivotal time, isn't it? What grabs you in life? What makes you the things that make you feel passionate about? Seeing some kind of almost GI type fellas there doing all their kind of stuff, looking $1 million on these beautiful bikes. That's bound to really kind of fire the imagination, isn't it?
Well, I think what it did for this area, obviously, they would leave after their 3 years or whatever, and people would be buying cheap Harleys, cheap V8s. Yeah. They were probably unreliable because they weren't looked after. And this would go back to this Harley reliability thing. Half the problem with most of the Harleys we've got in this country for many years was they were the ones they didn't want anymore in the States, and they were all worn out. And we had no money to look after them. So, you know, you used to steal the oil from your dad's lawnmower to put in it and whatever sort of thing.
Was there any conflict from your parents? Because a lot of people, you know, even I have it even now, people going, yeah, but you've got kids, bikes are dangerous, you shouldn't be on a bike. You know, people, there's that perception, isn't there? You're on two wheels. And yes, perhaps it is more dangerous than being in a car. But, you know, there's something about being on a bike. We say it every week, it's so special. You put the visor down, you put the helmet on, you can be in your own little world. It's amazing. Were your parents supportive as a youngster when you said, like, I love motorbiking?
I think my parents were, although my parents weren't motorcyclists, my grandparents were. So, my grandfather ran a little garage in the 1920s in Suffolk, Norfolk borders, and my grandmother was the schoolmistress, and she rode a Triumph in the 1920s.
No way.
Weren't many girls. Yeah, and he rode a Norton, and that's how the two of them got to meet each other.
So, I mean, that's the coolest thing I've ever heard, Paul, I think. Your grandma rode a Triumph and your granddad rode a Norton. That is amazing.
Yeah, and so although my parents didn't ride motorcycles, it was sort of accepted within the family that motorcycles were there somewhere. So as long as I, you know, they said as long as you wear a decent jacket and you wear a decent helmet and you wear some boots and stuff, you know, off you go.
Strange it skipped a generation, isn't it? A bit weird. Normally it would go from your
grandparents to your dad,
then to your uncle or to you. It's a bit weird it missed a generation, but it's obviously in your blood.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, my grandmother, she wasn't riding motorcycles when I grew up, but on the car side, she used to use me as an excuse to take me to so that she could go to like the Earl's Court Motor Show and stuff like that. So I'd be dragged along from a very early age and influenced, by her as to cars and motorbikes.
That's absolutely amazing. And only because I'm picturing my old, both grandmas of mine, my nana and my grandma, bless them, lovely, lovely women that were driven around by the husbands and would go nowhere near a motorbike. And when I rolled up on a motorbike, that sense of, oh, you are like, no, it's fine, grandma, it's fine. We're taking it steady. It's all right. We're not getting our knee down. That love affair. I mean, you can see it on your face, Paul, when you talk about it. Where's it at now? Given what you can do and what you can turn your hand to, am I either picturing a garage that's just got bikes as far as the eye can see that are all yours that you can do whatever you want and ride whenever you want? Or are you a bit more, what's the word, discerning than that nowadays?
I've got two enduro bikes in the garage.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Because I live just off a green lane. So I regularly go through the forests and up to Norfolk. Nice. And stuff on a green lane and stuff.
And is that sorry to put it, Paul, is that a different experience then to what we're talking about with the kind of customization side of it? That or is biking biking to you?
It doesn't matter what it is. I can appreciate and I think this is one of the great things, isn't it? And it's a great excuse to give to your wife or partner or whatever it is. You need more than one type of motorcycle to be a motorcyclist, don't you? because
so true.
If you want to go green laning, there's the right bike to do that. If you want to go to a custom show, there's the right bike. If you want to ride to the south of France, whatever it is, what does that mean? You need to ride more different types of bikes,
And you remember that one when she gets a different pair of shoes for a different occasion. I just say, well, you can't wear trainers on a night out, can
exactly.
you?
Exactly. My favourite, because also, the car and the car world and the bike world are very similar in that, aren't they? You need more than one sort of car as well. So, I'll say to you, a gentleman needs different vehicles for different occasions.
So true. It's so true. That's what I said to him. I'm building a 205 at the moment. I'm having that rebuilt. So it's different to the truck. It's a different genre. It's a different crowd. Talking to crowds, we've had some great guests in here, Paul. We really have, on the podcast and lots of celebrities who say, there's something very unique about getting on a bike. Yeah, I said it earlier, getting the helmet on, visor coming down. Nobody knows who you are. Do you find that with people who you build bikes for, the sense of freedom? We spoke about it when you passed your test. There's something very unique, isn't there, about being a biker? And I'm sure it's different to your custom car customers you have. There's something weirdly hypnotic almost when you get that lid on and you just go anywhere. It's special, isn't it?
It is special. You feel like you're part of a special breed of people. It's a family, isn't it? Motorcycling is a family thing. We're all one part of one big family, brought together by one common interest. And I think that's what I love. When we have our sort of monthly late nights in Bury St Edmunds, during the summer, we can get up to 2,500 people turn up.
Wow.
On every sort of bike and car you can imagine, from kids on mopeds to old classics to whatever sort of thing. And I think everyone is brought together by a common love for petrol head type things.
The thing that increasingly becomes something that you really are focusing on, and when you've got kids and you see kids and their generation and what these little computers in your hand do and what they can and can't do and what they create and what they destroy, the fact that you can sit on a bike and you got literally your motor skills are needed, your concentration's needed, and that's all you're focusing on. I mean, the older that I get, Paul, the more I really do appreciate that type of time. Is that something that you've seen? We talk about this long custom scene and how we make these newer bikes that got all the mod cons and you can get sat nav and all that type of stuff. And I do follow my sat nav as and when I need it on my bike, but just to be able to shove it on there or put it in your pocket and go, do you know what? For the next however many hours, minutes, whatever, I've got one thing to focus on, and it's this.
Yeah, and the wife on the back banging around the helmet.
The great thing about pillion riding, which my wife, she doesn't go on the back anymore, but partly because I bought a bobber which has got one seat. But there's nothing to do with getting anybody on the back. And I took when I first passed my test years and years ago, I took my old man on the back when I went over to Hull to see him. He came out in his big orange overalls. He was like, show me what this is all about. Then I said, really? And I'll get on the back. I went, again, really? But shoved an old helmet on that he had in the garage, which I'm sure went to about just under his nose. He was like, oh, it's fine. Went up to the end of the street, went round the roundabout. He must headbutted me six times. He went, bloody hell, you're a bit stiff on the brakes. I said, you weigh 15 stone. What, it's probably more to do with who's on the back rather than me, Dad. And he kind of went, oh, but he harumphed you. And he went, because he passed his test in the old way, which was examiner said, went at one side of an alley. He went, go around the corner. He went around the corner. You've made it. Here's your ticket. Go on, bugger off. So that was the first and only time that he went. But yeah, pillion riding is an art, isn't it?
It is. It is an art.
I love riding a bike, and you know, I'm not really one for playing music when I'm riding a bike, or I like that sort of just me and the bike type feeling.
You're listening to it, aren't you? Yeah.
And every ride, you know, becomes a bit of an adventure. You know, it's where's it going to take me, sort of thing.
I love this adventure today. Like, where's it taken us? We are just absolutely just chatting. Three guys who love bikes. This might be a tricky one, but if you could, so people might be listening to this or watching it who aren't necessarily bikers. It's not just bikers who tune in. So if you could sum up biking in three words, what would they be? Three words to describe biking.
Best real world experience.
There you go. I don't know how many words. Best real.
I'll take
that. Lovely.
I'll take that.
I'm taking real world as one word.
As one word. Yeah,
hyphenate it.
I mean, Paul, don't take grammar policing off you and Eve, because he's used the word sheeps in this podcast today. I didn't want to pull him up on it, but the his plural of sheep is sheeps. I'll leave you with that, mate. That sums that
there you
right
go.
Before we get, sorry, that's the pedant in me. Right, before we get into final question territory, we need you to take part in our quick fire round, please, Paul, if that's okay.
Sure.
See. You can have 60 seconds to answer as many questions as you can, and then we'll tot up your score at the end. Ewan, you're going to go with the first question, but not yet. I'm going to give you a five-second countdown, then we can crack on.
Okay.
So, Paul Crazy Horse Beamish, if you're sitting comfortably, your time starts now. Go, Ewan.
Who was your motorcycling hero growing up?
Barry Sheen.
What posters did you have on your bedroom wall?
Motorhead.
American bikes or British bikes?
American bikes.
Why is that?
Don't know. They just love them.
Yeah.
Just love them.
Okay, talking of love, who is your favourite Spice Girl?
Ginger.
Do you like Formula One?
Not really.
Indian or Harley?
Indian.
Indian or Chinese for a takeaway?
Indian.
And if there was a movie about Crazy Horse, who would play you?
Keanu Reeves.
Oh, nice.
Norton or Triumph?
Norton.
Do you like coriander?
Yes.
Stop the clock on that bombshell. You like coriander.
Hey, that ain't a bot. Coriander's amazing, Pross. I love it.
It is. I'm not saying it's not my quiz, Ewan. We're asking Paul. The minute we do our own
sorry,
quiz
sorry.
Stuff, mate.
I was going to say I haven't met her yet, so I don't know. But
yeah, whoa, there you go.
You scored 11, Paul. Congratulations. I mean,
11.
We've not done enough to give it any real context, but 11 sounds good to me.
It's better than 10. It's better than 10.
It's
right then. That is correct.
10 right. Up to 11. I love that.
Here we go, Paul. Right. We are nearly coming to final, not final whistle time, but I've got the final question I'd love to ask you. We enjoy this one because I think yours is going to be a great answer. We want to know about your most idyllic ride. So this is your fantasy ride. You're on us off in the sunset somewhere on a bike. Obviously, it's hypothetical, but we'd like to know, where are you going? What bike would you be riding? Who would you be with? And would there be a soundtrack?
Oh my God.
You've got to say the wife on the back, surely. Get some brownie points, but it's your answer.
Look, if we're talking a great ride, I'm afraid the wife wouldn't be on the back because you have got that butting of helmets. So I think it would be a solo ride as far as me riding. Be great to have a couple of my mates with me. I think it would be... I have done this ride once, and it's just an amazing ride. But I'd probably want to do it. I've got a Swedish chopper that we built a few years ago, a shovelhead Swedish chopper.
Nice.
So I'd want to be on that. And it's Miami down to Key West.
Oh, nice.
Over the bridges.
Nice and warm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there's going to be a soundtrack, that obviously I won't be listening to music on the bike, but someone will be in a pickup truck in front of me playing the music. I think it would probably be Bob Seger.
Very cool.
Or ZZ Top.
That's a lovely fantasy ride, that, isn't it? You've even got a support vehicle without knowing it because it's playing music.
Exactly.
And I'm sure it could carry the drinks and food and whatnot. Yeah, great.
Just for the scenery, over the bridges and all the way.
Again, like I said, from a weather-based point of view, Paul, that's completely transformed the wind and the rain that's coming in through this window here. It sounds so lovely. And we say it all the time on a Ewan because it's such a privilege that we get to speak to such lovely, lovely people. But again, Paul, it's your vibe, your geniality, the quite obvious passion for what you do. I mean, without getting too deep and meaningful to wrap up, but as an example for people that are listening or watching, following your dreams, following your passions, you've obviously been fearless in that. And is that something you'd heartily recommend to anybody in life?
I always think for everyone, at the end of the day, I suppose the one thing I've always thought is there's an opportunity, I'm going to take that opportunity. Whatever it is, whether it's been asked to go on a ride or do something, or whether it's asked to take part in something or whatever, take the opportunity.
Well, I think they're cracking words to finish on. Sadly, that's about it for this week's full chat powered by Bikeshaw. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikeshaw will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance and so much more.
Yeah, thanks today to our absolute brilliant guest, the one and only Mr. Paul Beamish. If you haven't checked out Crazy Horse, do so. It's crazyhorse.co.uk. That is with a K for crazy. It's been an absolute joy. I'm going to go and tinker with my bike now. I'm inspired. And actually, I'm going to book something. For you saying that, if you get an opportunity, do it. There's something on the horizon. I wasn't going to bother going. I'm going to go now. And I'm going to blame you to the missus while I'm going to be away for a week. So thank you for that.
I get blamed a lot.
I was reading that on the website, Paul. That's Paul, it's my fault, Beamish. I quite like the sound of that. If in doubt, everybody at home, please blame Paul. It's been an absolute pleasure. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
As ever, from me and Prats, it's been an absolute delight. Thank you for watching. Until next time, goodbye.